Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
Sidney Crosby, the golden goal!
A division of Bell Media.
Listening to a special summer edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You know, I could think of a lot better things to do with this ice.
On Sports Radio 1290.
Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock. Michael Remus is operating the R-Desk at www.illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And, of course, visit the website, www.illegalcurve.com. Quick score update. BC just punched in a touchdown. Convert will make it 10-6 BC over the Bombers with 3.5 minutes to go
importantly,
in the second quarter.
Important question. Are you a Mila Kunis fan?
I find her to be
a
enjoyable.
Nice actress. Yeah.
Remus, what about Mila Kunis?
Why is that an important question?
That's a Howard Stern.
We're talking about Friends with Benefits. Remus, you know that Drew wants to see that movie. Out of all of those movies, you want to see Friends with Benefits
Drew,
the most.
I'm surprised you haven't taken your fiancé to see it.
Drew, where's your fiancé?
Fiancés with Benefits.
Morons.
My fiancé.
Yeah, it's very good. We're thrilled that you can quote Seinfeld. Let's talk about the situation on Long Island, because they've been in the news a lot in the last couple weeks.
I thought you were going to segue into the situation at Meyer's Deli with the sandwich contest.
That's at 8:45.
Okay, I'm getting excited.
No, that's at 8:45.
Can't sandwich ad lib over here,
Drew?
Come
reading
on.
Text?
Can I talk? Can I talk? Is that okay with you guys?
You could talk.
First time you've ever turned down talking sandwiches.
We'll talk sandwiches at 8:45. It's in the show plan. You got emailed the show plan.
I didn't read the show plan.
No, of course.
Well, it's funny. I got to throw one thing in. Roberto Alomar was inducted into the Hall of Fame recently. Drew was inducted into the Omelette Eating Hall of Fame recently.
That's just not that funny. Like you've been, you, yeah.
Drew caught. Drew,
I'm gonna go to Drew's defense.
You've had better there.
That was forced.
But you could say that Drew's caught the taste of sandwiches.
Now, see, that's a good Roberto Alomar pun. If you
BC
remember,
just got a touchdown.
If you remember, Ezra, that's the touchdown I reported already.
Oh, really?
That was,
when?
It's 10-6. You told everyone.
Oh, okay. Continue on. Omelets.
The New York Islanders are in some trouble. Let's talk about that. They have a referendum coming up in
New York Islanders
in Nassau County on August 1st. The residents of Nassau County are voting in a referendum whether or not the county should authorize a bond of $400 million to pay for a new arena for the Islanders' use. So far, that seems to be the opinion of most of the people in Long Island. There doesn't seem to be an overwhelming support. The politicians of Nassau County seem to be on board with it, which is why they scheduled this referendum for the middle of summer, August 1st. So far, the editorials, the New York Daily News, has come out strong against it.
Okay.
Why should the taxpayers of Nassau County give a $400 million gift to billionaire Charles Wang?
Charles Wang has done a great job of running that team, though. I mean, you owe it to him, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's put together some really nice hockey players.
Good contracts,
there.
Really, really built the fan base, hired really capable people. He's done a great job.
Richie, not to mention the fact that the whole bonds fiasco in Glendale. Right now, the U.S. Treasury, the Senate, and the U.S. House of Representatives can't figure out how they're going to pay their bills. Why are they going to give Charles Wang $400 million at this time when the U.S. is, it's possible the U.S. is going to
default on their
debt limit?
Pretty sure those are different revenue streams, but your point is reasonable nonetheless.
The point is, why would they subsidize any kind of private venture when the economy has gone, down the tube?
It's interesting. I didn't know this. I've been reading a little bit about this. Obviously, Charles Wang doesn't own the arena. He doesn't get any of the revenue from the arena. But not only that, the arena is managed by a company called SMG. Not only do they get all the concession dollars, but apparently they get the bulk of the ticket revenue on top of that.
So like $3 a game?
Well, I mean, obviously there's no fans there. But
they're fans, just they don't want to see that product.
Well, and to that, Charles Wang certainly deserves criticism. Because you're right. You have a lousy... People will overlook a lousy arena. Joe Louis Arena is a lousy arena.
I've been there. It's not lousy. It's not great.
It's old.
Older.
It's
78? Well, not that old. It's old for the new age arenas.
It's 30-some-odd years old. It's
like the Sky Dome. It was new right before the Baltimore new...
Exactly. Yeah, okay, fine. But anyways, people will go to see a good hockey team regardless of the arena. In Long Island, they haven't had good hockey. When was the last time they had a good hockey team?
When Pierre Turgeon got hit into the boards after scoring a goal by Dale Hunter in the playoffs.
That was 1988, I believe.
Oh, I was going to say, they didn't have some good series with Toronto in the early 2000s.
Yeah, they lost in 7 to the Leafs.
In the first round.
2001 or 2.
Drew, I don't know if you saw this. I want to just read something. I printed out this quote. There was an editorial in the New York Daily News about this, okay?
Please.
Because this is very unpopular in New York. Okay, so this is what... I don't know who wrote this. It might have been anonymous because it's an editorial. As with so much of Mangano's pig-in-a-poke proposal, the financial projections are as squishy as they come. One more reason for voters to be wary, people that are going to vote on this. That said, let's do a run-through. Suddenly, the Islanders foresee an astonishing 73% rise in attendance, producing $229 million in annual gross revenue. Multiply that $220 million by the 30-year life of the bond issue that Mangano is proposing, and you get a stupefying $6.9 billion. This sounds like... I'm not reading the quote anymore. This sounds like a deal that nobody's buying into. I mean, 73% rise in attendance. Their attendance is horrible. Sounds like Phoenix all over again.
You know how you build attendance? Put a winning product on the ice. It's not rocket science here.
You know,
hire a general manager who's a legitimate NHL general manager.
Like, add an up and coming young star like Brian Rolston.
Well, let's talk about that trade today.
$5 million.
Brian Rolston today was traded from the New Jersey Devils to the New York Islanders in exchange for Trent Hunter.
$5 million.
Brian Rolston is dramatically overpaid.
$5 million,
as he is repeatedly telling you his salary right now.
That's true.
Reason they made that deal is strictly for to get to the salary floor, the salary cap floor, the threshold in which each team must spend on salaries each season. Is this the worst team in the NHL right now? Is this a worse situation than Phoenix?
It's the worst trade of all time.
No. They have a lot more talent. They have talent on the team, Drew. They have some nice young up-and-coming talent. Whether it be their top draft pick this year or whether it be, his name is Ryan Strome, excuse me, John Tavares. Josh Bailey hasn't progressed like they wanted him to, but with Mark Streit back in the bite, they're not going to be that bad. They're not going to be great, but they're not going to be that terrible. But just... what they're doing here is they're adding Brian Rolston. They're getting rid of a 2-year contract and Trent Hunter for $4 million, for Brian Rolston for $5 million for 1 year because, A, they want to get rid of Trent Hunter, and B, they want cap flexibility after the season, and C, and probably most importantly and most immediate, is that they need to get to the salary cap floor. At what point, again, if you're the Islanders fans, at what point are you going to compete? At what point are you going to start investing money into the product? And that's and you raise a good point. They haven't done anything to do that.
Let me ask this question. So say on August 1st the referendum is defeated. The taxpayers vote no. And the Islanders, they have a lease till 2015. So they play out their lease until 2015. What cities want NHL hockey in the United States?
Well, that's are you asking about contraction now?
I'm asking about contraction.
It seems
like it's the only option.
Number one is Quebec City. Number two is the Toronto area.
Well, obviously,
number
that's in Canada.
What, Seattle?
Houston.
It's not Kansas City right now, based on the whole LA NFL thing, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, if Seattle, Kansas City, and Houston wanted an NHL team, telling me that they wouldn't have an NHL team by now?
That's a good point. Is contraction an option?
Well, I don't think it is an option because the NHL... problem with the contraction
no,
is
you could do
the NHLPA would have to agree to it.
You know what you could do, though, if you want to really appease the NHLPA, especially long-term, you increase the roster size by one.
And that
makes 30 jobs, so that's one team. And then, by the time, over time, that one job will create itself after a while and make the money back for the players.
Okay, that's probably a reasonable solution to the problem. But, commentators talk about the NHL going to all these other cities, Kansas City, Seattle, Houston. There's never been an owner who's expressed an interest in owning an NHL franchise in any of these cities.
You said it, Drew. If they're not there now, then when are they going to be there?
That's right. You're telling me Kansas City with their shiny new Sprint Center, if they wanted an NHL team, they couldn't have had one?
Well, that may be a landing spot for Islanders. They have threatened that before.
Well, they play an exhibition game there every year.
Yeah.
You know, there's no owner. There's nobody that wants to own a team there. It's never come to fruition. You know, no. Conceivably, could Charles Wang still own the team and move there? Yeah, that's sure. A possibility. But, I mean, there's never been a... Kansas City's never been a wonderful hockey market.
No. They don't even have professional basketball.
No. And they used to. They lost them.
What was the name again?
Kansas City Kings. Sacramento.
That was when you were growing up?
Yeah, about that. 1965, I think.
Oscar Robertson? No, that was Cleveland.
No, that was Kansas City.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
No, are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. Remus?
Really?
I don't know old basketball.
No, look it up is what I'm telling you.
He was LeBron before there was
the
LeBron.
The Knickerbockers.
He was the triple-double.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure Oscar Robertson played on Kansas City.
Drew, back to the topic of contraction, though. I think it is an interesting topic. I have no idea. I mean, I'd have to do research, Richie,
on Oscar Robertson?
Yeah, that's a huge topic. But I think it's pretty clear, though, that Atlanta and Phoenix aren't the only markets that are actually, you know, let's say... 1, 2, 3 years in the Islanders' case,
well,
of being in serious trouble and of relocating, right?
There was a report earlier a couple weeks ago that Dallas was losing $1 million a week.
Yeah, Forbes reported that. It was denied, but yeah, something about Forbes' name carries a little bit of cachet, though, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's got cachet, baby.
Yeah. But, I mean, if they're legitimately losing $1 million a year, or a week, pardon me, why would anybody buy a team? If you open up books, financial books, and you're a potential owner and you see this team is losing $1 million a week, what would go through your mind that would say, oh yeah, it's a good investment. I want to spend $150 million to buy this team.
And this is a massive city in Texas.
No. Oscar Robertson played on Cincinnati Royals.
Cincinnati Royals, sorry, yes.
Mm.
Ah, darn, I got that one wrong.
Sorry, Drew, as you continue.
Oh wait, no, the Royals moved to Kansas City and then the Kansas City retired his number though.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like we're all right.
Yeah, kind of.
Somewhat.
Let's go to break. It's rare the opportunity when we're all right. So why don't we go to commercial break, and when we come back, we'll see if we can be even more right on the other side. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
What's up, Drew?
What's up tonight?
What is up tonight?
I thought you guys are discussing, we already discussed this.
Drew was at Slayer last night.
Yeah, Slayer was last night.
Slayer and Megadeth.
Whoa!
Megadeth, yeah.
That's what you do when you're at Slayer.
Was it Megadeth? Rob Zombie.
Rob Zombie. Hey, you know, my mistake as usual. Okay, I always get Slayer, Rob Zombie, and
apparently,
Megadeth confused.
Steve Martin knocked...
My parents were there.
Yeah,
so
my mom was there. Said it was terrific.
Yeah.
I've seen him on Letterman. He can play the banjo.
Tannis was at Steve Martin. Sheldon Slayer. We haven't seen him yet. He's been home 3 days.
Sheldon slash Dad.
Parenthood, great movie.
Yeah, exactly.
What was Steve Martin's best movie?
The Jerk.
Fatherhood? What was it called?
Father of the Bride.
Father of the Bride 1 or 2.
Isn't Man with Two Brains up there? Not that I've seen it.
Isn't he an Airplane? Him and Joe Candy. Isn't that an Airplane?
No, that's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Airplane is Leslie Nielsen.
I'm going to throw my hat in for
Oliver Sholem.
Reem, have you ever seen Canadian Bacon?
I have. The funny
part this morning on your plate.
It's very clever. The best part about Canadian Bacon is every actor in it is Canadian.
Really? Yeah.
Rick Moranis, is he in there?
Yeah, John Candy. Every actor in Canadian Bacon is Canadian.
Jonathan Torrance?
Uncle Buck is one of the best movies ever.
Uncle Buck.
Sean Majumdar, is he in there?
I don't think he was born when Canadian Bacon came out. But anyways, Steve Martin last night at the Pantages. Enjoyable show, apparently, by all accounts. Let's talk about... We haven't talked about Pascal Vincent being hired as the Jets' assistant head coach.
I like how Drew said Vincent with the French accent.
Drew,
Are you going for some poutine later?
No, I'm not, but thank you for pointing that out. Anyways, Pascal Vincent hired as the Jets, I guess, second assistant head coach. Sort of came out of nowhere. Nobody really knew much about him. I mean,
hat tip to Michael Remus for being at that press conference. We got lots of good stuff on the website.
Let's get Remus in here and talk about it, because we don't really know much about him at all.
Apparently, Noel didn't know much about him at all either. I mean, he had become highly recommended to Noel and through the coach's grapevine. He had heard some positive things, like his, you know, he's used the term, quote, youthful exuberance. It brings a lot of energy, and I don't know. He said that, you know, a lot of the other staff is a bit older, I guess, Noel and Charlie Heidi, they're, you know, into their
early
50s.
Early 50s, yeah.
And Vincent is, you know, 38, having coached junior. He's got a lot of experience with younger players that will be useful, you know, with the Jets' younger players.
Do you think Heidi wanted Vincent higher because he's bald?
So he wouldn't feel alone? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, you know, bald brothers.
No, I don't think so. That's why we do the show, though.
It is an interesting... Remus, I'd like to hear a little bit more, though. I mean, you interviewed him, correct?
No, I
know.
That was me.
Drew was on the
conference call.
Well, then
Drew,
why
you're
you sure
becoming a pro at those True North conference calls.
Well, I do what I can. To be honest,
I don't know anything about him aside from what I've read on the site.
And that's sort of interesting. You know, he was successful as a junior coach.
Yep.
A lot of success. But, you know, I went back and I tried to find out some information about his teams. You know, did they dominate in one specific area and that's what appealed to him? And they didn't see, like, there was nothing like, you know, as much as I could do, you know, on a quick Google search, you know, it didn't come out Pascal Vincent, you know, offensive juggernaut, offensive dynamo, offensive magician.
He's going to work on the power play, though.
He definitely is going to work on the power play. But, you know, there was nothing about the teams that he had in junior that sort of that jumped out at me as, yes, this is why he's been hired.
Because
he was terrific on the power play, right?
I got something that'll jump out at you, and Remus can back this up, too. Because
he's actually got a jack in the box, is what he has.
This is interesting. Vincent coached Andrej Pavlich, played in the QMJHL.
Yes.
And Pascal Vincent coached Pavlich in the QMJHL. Obviously, Richie, that isn't the main reason why they hired him.
But it can't hurt.
That's a pretty interesting angle. You know, you have an 18-year-old guy from the Czech Republic in the QMJHL, obviously is highly regarded, is now the Jets' number one goalie, basically forced them to trade Kari Lehtinen, let Kari Lehtinen go. I mean, that's going to be super beneficial. It's about familiarity, and I think that's an interesting link. When you look at a guy who's only 39 and he's been coaching and was in the GM in the QMJHL most recently with Montreal, that's something that they look at because, you know, Remus will step in here. I mean, Pascal Vincent wasn't a guy that was expecting to be hired by the Jets at all.
He said he had no contact. He didn't know really anybody in the organization.
Wasn't shopping himself around.
They met him. They met at the draft, and you know they chatted. Or him and I think it was him and Zinger met at the draft.
Yep.
And they chatted.
Yep.
And then they brought him in for an interview. This is after. First of all, it should be pointed out their first choice was the guy who re-upped in
Richards.
San Antonio, right?
Yep.
No, not Richards. The guy who took the head coaching job in
San Antonio. Yeah, San Antonio.
Okay, that was going to be their first choice. But they met him at the draft and they chatted him up and they brought him in for an interview. Obviously, he did well in the interview because he said, you know, he sounded genuinely, on the conference call, he was genuinely surprised, and I think he was humbled at the opportunity.
The angle I like, it's not the old boys club hire. It's a hire they think is a guy who's capable, young, moving, you know, a guy who they can move forward with and maybe could be something in the future. I like that angle about it, for sure. And I like it, you know, there was rumblings about Mike Keane, whether it's him or not. I like the coaching experience as well. You know, you have a coaching experience for a guy who's only coached minimally in the NHL, and Claude Noel certainly coached at many levels before, so he's experienced. But it's nice to have some youthful exuberance with him, maybe get after it a bit more, give Noel a little bit of time, maybe run some practices. If he's been a head coach before, so it helps that he can run practices. You know, for example, you bring in a former player right away. You know, it's kind of still odd for him to run a practice when he was taking part in it just so soon ago. I mean, so recently. And now you have a guy who's run practices before. Because a lot of these assistant coaches, a lot of these head coaches like to have their assistant coaches run practice to change the message a bit.
Yeah.
And they watch in the stands and they still evaluate, but they don't always run practice.
Well, it's interesting, going back to the Bombers, apparently it was Richard Harris who used to give the pregame speeches to the players most often, more often than the head coach himself.
Well, so, I mean, from all accounts, he was an inspiring guy, and La Police can put you to sleep. Doesn't mean he's not a good coach. Just he's not, maybe not, that's not his forte. So what you're doing is you're mastering skill sets, and you're allowing people to excel, and I like that. You're compartmentalizing some of the responsibilities. What are you staring at?
Nothing. I'm actually staring at Ezzy's BBM conversation.
All right. You know, one other thing. Just to butt in here, one other thing, guys. I'm pretty sure Vincent, he was also the general manager in Quebec, too.
Yep.
So, you know, that he'll also bring, or sorry, he was from Montreal.
Montreal.
But he'll bring, you know, some experience, you know, as a GM and, you know, just a different, you know, set of eyes in evaluating players and looking at talent.
And to that point, it's a great point by Remus, because to that point, you know, there's an edge, I think, for the brass and the Jets, you know, about the gems, the hidden gems, you know, maybe like a Kendall McArdle, who maybe other people didn't see as extensively as they did, whatever it may be. Now you have a guy who's really, you know, everybody's got scouts, but you have a guy who's really, really, really been immersed in the culture and
he knows the QMJHL better than probably anybody.
Maybe he has a vision of a guy they can sign up as a free agent. Maybe he can, you know, he will help in the development of certain players and aid and those kind of things, whether it be the prospects camp in the future. There's many angles that there are many things to like about the hire, and I think the biggest thing I like is it's not a recycled hire. I mean, we need NHL and hockey in general needs to get away from these recycled hires and move forward, similar to what baseball is doing and NFL, other sports. new blood and let that excitement carry forward.
And Richie, you know, your point is well taken. Doesn't a guy like Patrice Cormier come to mind? Played in the QMJHL?
Yeah, good point, Ezzy.
A guy like him, he can mentor him, help him on the power play. This is a guy that this is his first NHL coaching gig. I agree with you 100% and everybody here that it's a good way to contrast a Charlie Huddy hiring, who's, you know, a guy that's you can make the argument that is exactly who would be in the old boys club. And Pascal Vincent's hiring got a little bit overshadowed by the logo, Drew.
The logo was the same day.
They've got their coaching staff now. They've got Flaherty in place as the goaltending coach. They're pretty much all set. I mean, the only kind of major thing that's kind of hanging over the Jets, as we go into August, is Bogosian.
Yes.
That's it.
Can we talk about that?
They've got everything else wrapped up, Richie.
Okay, let's talk about Bogosian, because Bogosian is something, you hear rumors about Bogosian. I wrote about this on the site a couple days ago.
Yeah.
No need to trade him. You have all the leverage here. The only thing he can do to get for leverage is hold out. He's not going to hold out. He wants some money. I mean, nobody holds out anymore. As our friend on Twitter pointed out, Peter on Twitter pointed out, the last time somebody held out 2005 was Kovalchuk. 6 years ago, guys. Bogosian is a guy who's going to command, I've written a whole article on what he's going to command in terms of value, whether it be around 2.6 or whatever it may be. The truth is this. He's a guy who's improved, people talk about maybe a lack of improvement, but there's one thing right now. He's taken on more responsibility in terms of defensively as the past seasons have gone on. A lot of growing in Atlanta, and I'm echoing a lot of the things I said in the article. The Jets fans need to be patient. There's no reason to trade a guy like this, because if you trade a guy like this and maybe you get the center that you so desire right now, well, 2 years down the road, you have a huge hole of defense. So you're creating a hole. Grow with what you have, Guy, defensemen like that are very hard to find.
It doesn't make any sense. Logically, it doesn't make sense. It
doesn't make sense. But people like rumors. People like to clamor. The rumor was Sam Gagne and Jeff Petrie for Zach Bogosian. No way in HE double hockey six.
Nice.
I don't think you trade Bogosian at this point. I like Sam Gagne as a hockey player, but I don't think that trade makes sense. Doesn't seem like they're having trouble. They're just continuing to negotiate. And like you've talked about before, Richie, negotiation isn't easy. It's not like they sit down and they're just like 2.5. No, there's a lot of things that you have to factor in.
A player in a similar circumstance who doesn't play in Canada, although was probably as instrumental in a team winning the cup as we've seen in the past little while, and that's Brad Marchand, in terms of a forward, a young forward, as instrumental as you're going to see in terms of his team winning the cup. He's an RFA with the same lack of rights as Bogosian has, So Boston, you don't hear any panic coming out of Boston or obviously they just won the cup, but you're not in Canada and it's not the only thing you focus on. When you have the Patriots and the Red Sox and the Celtics moves or whatever it may be to focus on, that it gets lost in the shuffle. And here it is. It's the only game in town aside from the Bombers. And so we talk about it a lot, but there just needs to be patience. Patience is a virtue, Drew.
They're very, very good. Well said.
Don't forget the gold eyes.
You're talking about games in town, talking about patience. I don't get it. Anyways, let's go to break. Quick score update at half. BC 13, Bombers 6.
Bombers are going to come back. Coach Harris.
I have no doubts. On the other side of the break, Jeff Kurbison from the Winnipeg Free Press. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. 8:30 in the evening. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Michael Remus is operating the R Desk at www.illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And be sure to check out the website that started it all, www.illegalcurve.com. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
You know him from his articles in the Winnipeg Free Press. We're pleased to welcome to the program first-time guest, Jeff Kurbison. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Good to be here.
Thanks, Jeff. How are you doing this evening?
Pretty good, thanks.
That's good. Jeff, we've spent a lot of our show talking about the logo unveiling and everything else. Might as well start off with that one. What were your thoughts on the logo?
I thought it was pretty good. It's one of those things that I think unless... and I think the response to it was predictable. I think unless you'd had, for most people, unless you'd had a slight tweaking of the old logo, there's going to be a certain segment of the population say, this sucks. But, I think the military angle, they've got a bit of a story to tell about it. It's a better story than when the Jets were first named by Benny Haskin, and he just because he liked the New York Jets. So I think it's starting to grow on people. I'm seeing a lot of hats and T-shirts out there. So, yeah, I think it's great. Mind you, I also think when... if and when they have a retro night and they bring out the old uniforms, it's going to be bananas.
Jeff, there's Mark Chipman kind of talked about the logo kind of playing a role in deciding that the name was, you know, was a keeper. Do you believe that, or do you believe that the team name was chosen only because of public pressure and only after the fact that they pick a logo that it was a military logo?
Well, I don't know. I don't think they had any choice with the name. I think that the hue and cry about the name after the team was purchased was something that they couldn't go against. That Chipman's a populist. When they built the MTS Center, they had a very grandiose design with lots of glass and stuff. Would look like kind of like the Museum of Human Rights. And then you had all those people who were saying, the same people who are giving the Eaton's building a hug, saying, "Oh, it doesn't fit with Portage Avenue." And then he changed his mind, or he changed plans, and he made it out of red brick. And he said, "You know what? That'll remind you of the Eaton's building. And then we'll put up Timothy Eaton, the statue, up on the second floor. He can come up and rub his toe." So I think that he saw what was going on. He was, he's been walking on water since May 31st. And why would you want to end the honeymoon by picking a name that you're gonna, it's just gonna bother a lot of people? So maybe the military thing was part of it, but I just think he would have had a PR nightmare on his hands if he had chosen anything but the Jets. And you can tell, once the name was chosen, and when Chipman uttered those words at the draft, there were grown men all over Winnipeg weeping into their beers when that happened. So, obviously he made the right choice.
I'm interrupting here for a second, but you got to wonder sometimes what goes through people's minds, given that people were hugging a building in the city that was completely and totally abandoned.
Oh, I know. where were they when Eden's needed, sales?
Exactly. They were nowhere to be found.
They were buying the brick to help make the MTS Center.
Yeah, most of those people are dead now anyway, right? So,
Jeff, you wrote about in early July, you kind of called what the Jets are doing right now the 100-day challenge. And can you maybe talk about the progress that they've made? And, are they staffing? Are they adding a significant amount of staff in basically all departments in order to prepare themselves for the NHL season and obviously the seasons moving forward?
I don't think they're adding a lot of staff because, as Chipman has said before, they were operating the Moose as if they were an NHL franchise. So, they have all the departments already in place. Some of the small things are starting to happen. People's email addresses now are, so-and-so at WinnipegJets.com. So they're doing some of the little things, and they're plugging away. And if you try and get a hold of anybody over there, they're all, you'd have better luck getting a hold of the permit. They're all working, working like crazy. And it's a very tight or a closed shop a lot of the time. So, there's not a lot of chatter coming out of there. So when they're ready to talk about something, they release it. But for the most part, they're just going, they have their heads down, going about their business. And I think we can be pretty sure that these guys are going to be ready when the time comes, because it's been a professionally run organization the whole way through. Chipman is spending more of his time in running the show there, and I'm not sure exactly what they're doing right now, but you guys were talking about some of it earlier, but they've got all the big stuff seems to be out of the way, and now they got to start bringing in the players and getting ready for training camp.
Jeff, in yesterday's newspaper, you talked about your appointment to select your seats. The Bombers are about to score a touchdown, by the way. That's what I'm talking about. In yesterday's newspaper, sorry to get sidetracked there. We got the game on in the studio. You wrote about you and your friends and how you were selecting your seats. Could you maybe just walk us through that experience let us know how it's been going with, some of the other people that you've come across that have, gone in for those appointments to pick their seats?
Well, sure. It's I think the headline was something about, or the subhead was called Christmas in July. Because you walk in there, and, the four of us walked in, and there are, all around the building, there are just pockets of people who are waiting. And it's, they're so giddy with anticipation. And then, the sales guy will come up and say hi. Are you ready to take it to your seats? We're ready to take it to your seats. Let's go. Then you kind of follow them, and you're just kind of looking around, looking at each other, you can't believe this because you've been waiting for so long for this kind of thing to happen. and they walk you up to your seats. I mean, they had pitched it as, you know, you're going to get to choose your seats. You don't actually get to choose your seats. They have the seats chosen for you. And the rationale for that is if they let you do it by appointment, if you got to choose, then the people who book the earliest appointments would get to get the best seats. And not, you know, they try and base it all on how long you've been a season ticket holder, or what the kind of financial commitment you've made, you know, for the team here, you know, 3 to 5 years. So you get shown to your seats, you walk up there, you sit in them, and, you know, you didn't get to look at much. There's a concrete floor. They're getting ready for a concert, I think. but you can just, you sit there and you look around. You can ask these guys any kind of questions you want to ask. And, it's exciting. You sit there thinking, you know, you don't want summer to end, but you know that when it does, there's going to be some, you're going to be in a building that is going to be, it'll be unlike anything we've seen before, I think, or at least in many, many years. We were saying as we walked out, we felt like we peppered this guy with 1,000 questions, and it was like we were 10 years old. We were so excited to be in the building and to be thinking about what we're going to be doing, you know, in a couple months.
Jeff, question for you. My season ticket appointment date is actually next Wednesday, so I'm sort of interested in this on a personal level. Yep. You know, obviously, you know, one person put down the deposit in order so that you could get in line to get your tickets. When, you know, so if four of you showed up there to pick the seats, were each of the four of you able to pay separately?
What we did is the guy put the deposit down. We're all paying him.
Okay.
And I think that's the safest way to do it. It sounded like there were a couple people, our sales guy told us some stories about people who had, if I wanted to get seats and you were the season ticket holder for the Moose, but if you didn't want them, you put the order in and then I put my credit card down, then the deal would get canceled.
Oh, okay.
So you really had to kind of play by the rules there. They set all the rules out initially, when the drive to 13,000 started.
Right, of course.
So I think it's safest just for... We're just paying our main guy.
Okay, so you just decided to do it. That guy gets all the air miles, and then you're just going to pay him.
That's exactly what we were talking about yesterday. So we that seems to be the easiest thing. There's no questions. You don't need to, you don't want to be doing anything to, get in trouble.
Sounds good, Jeff. We'll let you go on this last question. You've been writing a lot about the Jets and the process and everything else. You have anything else in store for our readers? Maybe want to give them a little bit of a preview what they can look forward to reading from you on this topic.
Well, I've got a couple in tomorrow. I have a question for you guys.
Oh, okay.
I talked to Kurt Kielbach today.
Sure.
And the voice is hoping to, get back in the broadcast booth, and he has been in contact with 1290, and he's just kind of sitting patiently waiting for the final announcement that the broadcast rights are being awarded to TSN Radio, and it will be broadcast on 1290. So it's interesting to talk to him, and even talking to Kubek on the phone, he's not saying, the wraparound or whatever, but it's still cool to hear his voice.
Sure.
I think there are a lot of people out there right now who would love to see him back in the broadcast. There'll be lots of people who would like to have that job. So I'd be curious to know how that pans out. I think the popular choice, of course, would be Kielbach. And the other thing I'm working on is there's the first new Winnipeg Jets logo tattoo given out today. I don't know if you guys saw that on Twitter.
Well, we actually,
you guys have had them on already, haven't you?
Yeah, tattoo artist was interviewed earlier today on Hustler and Lawless, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Okay, I talked to the woman.
Oh, okay.
It's a woman who got it done. She got it put on her shin.
Okay.
And she's not even a huge hockey fan.
She's a big supporter of Winnipeg, obviously.
Can she
though.
Sell the tattoo? Like, people are going to be selling their tickets after the fad is out?
She's a big fan of Winnipeg. She's a former military medic.
Okay.
And she figured, the logo signified for her, every tattoo tells a story. This one signified for her the Jets coming back to Winnipeg, Winnipeg being kind of a big, big, big city again. But she, she likes hockey. But she's, I thought she would have been some kind of crazed maniac. And she said, no, she's a moderate hockey fan, but she wanted to be, she thought just, and she did it all kind of on a whim. The tattoo artist put up that tweet, and then within 12 minutes, she'd said yes.
Well, there you go.
The other cool thing I'm working on,
yeah.
Sorry, just keep going here, is there is one player for the Jets who I think has the arguably the coolest career of any Winnipeg Jet. Anybody, anyone has any guesses? I might have mentioned it to one of you guys.
Well, Jeff, you emailed it to me, so I know the answer. But
we can look really like we should be fortune tellers, but we'll let you give the answer.
Willie Lindstrom.
Sure.
And the reason is, I talked to him a few weeks ago, and I was hockeydb.com looking at different stuff, and Lindstrom had, I think, the greatest career. He came over in 75 in the second round of Europeans, and his boyhood idol was Bobby Hull. He walks in the dressing room, sees Alfred Anders, who he knows back from home, sees his boyhood idol there, plays 4 years in the WHA, wins 3 Alco Cups, goes to the NHL with the Jets. You know, they can't beat anybody for the first couple of years. Gets traded to Edmonton. Plays the first year that, you know, he's at the playoff at the trade deadline. That first year goes to the Stanley Cup Finals, loses to the Islanders. The next 2 years, wins 2 Stanley Cups. So he becomes the first player to ever win an AFCO Cup and then a Stanley Cup in that order. And a couple other players did it the other way around, you know, Hull and Howe, for example. And then after his third year in Edmonton, he got picked up by Pittsburgh and walked in the dressing room there. There's 66.
Wow.
He becomes the first player ever to play with Gretzky and then Lemieux on their club teams. So, I mean, Willie's a guy who scored 25 goals a year and, you know, great team player and that sort of thing and you know, second-line guy. But throughout his entire career, he must have been looking around the dressing room, you would think, you know, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer, just thinking, what have I done to deserve this, you know, this blessed career? Because everywhere I go, you know, I'm playing with the greatest players in the game.
Sure.
Well, I think his career, and lots of other guys have had better careers, but for a guy who was kind of
unheralded, right?
Yeah. And so I just think he didn't get a lot of attention. But yep. So I wrote about him. It's going to run. I'm not sure when the story's going to run. But I think he's a very nice guy to talk to, and I just think his career is we should be giving it a little more attention because. How much cooler can you get than that?
I can't agree with you more on that. We look forward to reading that in the pages of the Winnipeg Free Press. Jeff Kerbison of the Winnipeg Free Press.
I have a question for you guys.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
What do you guys think about Timo Soani right now?
I'd love to say that I think there's a possibility, but there's not. He's either going to be in Anaheim or he's going to retire, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, see, I agree with you. And I talked to his agent, Don Basley, a few weeks ago. I wrote a company story about a month ago saying, you know, what if, because another player rep said, yeah, it's possible, and then crazier things have happened. And Basley admitted that crazier things have happened. But I just thought when Zwei first came around and, you know, free agents could start signing, that I thought he would be, if he's going to do it, he would sign right away. And so I think the further away we get from that date, I just think there's a sliver of a chance that maybe there'll be they can pull some agreement together. Maybe they give him his own plane. You know, they'd kind of do the Roger Clemens thing with him.
Sure.
You know what? You can fly back and forth to Anaheim, Timu, and they could accommodate him however they wanted to. I don't know. But I didn't know what you guys thought about it because you know, part of it is as a guy remembering, you know, the 76 goal season. A little piece of me is fantasizing about how crazy it would be if Soani came back. I agree with you, it's a small chance, but I still think that chance is out there.
Well, it's certainly out there until he signs. I'll tell you what, if you see Anaheim go out and sign a player, not obviously nobody's going to be able to replace Timu, but if Anaheim goes out and makes a signing where, you know, of a goal scorer, somebody like that, then maybe there might be a little bit of a smoke where there's fire. But yep. Until then, I think it's a little bit of wishful thinking, but I like where your head's at.
Yeah, okay.
Jeff Kerbison of the Winnipeg Free Press, we thank you for joining us this afternoon, this evening, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, Jeff.
My pleasure.
Take care, Jeff. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Well over time, let's head to commercial
sandwich
break.
Talk next, Drew.
When we come back, boy. We'll wrap it up. We got some sandwich discussion.
Sandwich preview.
Cheers
sandwich
and
preview.
Cheers. Yeah, sandwich preview. Cheers and jeers. Things
Remus
that,
is coming in.
You're listening
Remus,
to
get in here, Reem.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Final
segment on this Thursday night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, Michael Remus.
Is Myers still open?
You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, be sure to check out the website at www.illegalcurve.com.
I'm hungry.
Just for the record, next Thursday, 6 to 8, and then for pretty much the next month or so, we're Thursday, 6 to 8, I believe. And, of course, just continue to check out the website. It's got the list of our schedule of shows for the month of August all over there. Next Thursday is going to be a very interesting show, in addition to all the great guests we're going to book.
Why, Drew?
Because next Thursday we are going to do a on-air taste test of the Illegal Curve sandwich.
There you go!
Our good friend, Harrison Steak from Myers Deli, good friend of the station, has graciously decided to put together an Illegal Curve sandwich.
What's in the sandwich?
We don't know that yet. We've been accepting offers online. And
Tim had a good response.
We've received
alternate Tim.
Yeah.
Tim
Bonner. We've seen some great options about the sandwich. And next week, last sort of half an hour, 20 minutes of the show next week, Harrison's going to come in.
That's a big meal.
Well, he's going to come in. He's going to bring some sandwiches for all of us. We're going to do an on-air taste test. Now, and by this time next week, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show sandwich will be decided upon and will be available for purchase at Meyer's Delicatessen.
Now, Richie, don't we want to know about, are we allowed to bring in any outside condiments?
There are no outside condiments allowed.
Okay, so Harrison's bringing condiments.
I believe the two sandwiches that it's been narrowed down to are, there's one with
the brisket,
rye bread, hot mustard.
Ooh.
Corned beef.
Down.
Montreal smoked meat.
Yeah.
And potato salad inside the sandwich.
It. Love it.
Wow.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
That's Michael Remus's touch right there.
That's the first sandwich. And I believe the second sandwich is some sort of smoked roast beef.
Ooh, interesting.
With smoked hot mustard. Rye bread, I believe. I could be wrong on this one because it's being designed by the Meyer sandwich artist, actually.
Very into that.
So, and I believe there's I'm not sure if there's, I think there's a gravy on it or a dip of some sort.
Ooh. Yes.
Nice.
I'm not 100% sure.
Gravy.
We're going to know for sure next week at this time when we do the Illegal Curve Hockey Show sandwich on-air taste test.
My grandmother went into Meyer's this week and told them if they don't have the Illegal Curve sandwich, she's not coming back.
Really?
Really?
Right.
Your whole family really...
You don't want to lose... You don't want to lose...
Your whole family really Baba. Goes in there and just yells at merchants.
Not at merchants.
Now, guys, I'm not going to be here next
merchants.
Week. Wait, can you guys FedEx me my portion to my hotel?
In Chicago.
You're
going to
Lollapalooza, right?
I'm going to Lollapalooza. Can you...
So, on Thursday night, you're flying out Thursday morning, afternoon?
I've looked into rescheduling my flight for this taste test.
Yeah.
But I don't know if
I can... It's like when George lines up the Snickers bar. Was it Snickers?
What was that, Drew?
I'm trying to bring
your
dolphin? Mic. Talk into the mic.
I am talking. I'm talking into the mic.
Anyways, have you considered rebooking your flight so that you're here for the sandwich?
If the station and Illegal Curve want to cover the...
We don't. Just stop right there.
I'd rather have more sandwich.
Yeah. Really, what you're asking us to do is now give up a portion of the sandwich and pay for your flight.
Well, are they still going to bring in four portions now, or are they going to bring in three?
Well, I think there's going to be four.
Tim's going to get a bite.
Tim's going to get one.
Tim's going to get a bite.
Tim's getting a bite of the sandwich.
There's going to be four instead of five.
Oh, come on.
Well, nobody told you to book your flights around...
I did this months ago.
Well, Remus.
You're lost.
Music.
I'll tell you what, Remus.
Doesn't last as long as a sandwich.
When you come back from Lollapalooza, just go to Meyer's. Buy the Illegal Curve sandwich.
Well done, Drew.
Thank you. You'll know where it is right there.
All right, that's fine. Well, can I tell them I'm an Illegal Curve and get a discount?
I don't think there's no discount.
There's no discount.
It's not the Van Buren boys.
Yeah, there's no discount. Exactly. What do you guys say? You want to wrap it up with some cheers and jeers?
Wrap it up?
Okay. Lesson to be learned there.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Dapper Don himself, Ezra Ginsberg.
I just want to say, before I cheers, I think, it's on behalf of everyone, I think we should honor Coach Richard Harris.
Yes.
Dedicate this show to him.
Yeah.
It's a hockey show, but, we're all Bombers fans. I worked for the Bombers in a part-time role for a couple of years. I met Richard Harris, really nice guy. Obviously, it was a big loss, so we'll honor him. The Bombers are doing a great job by honoring him by winning the game right now. So I'm going to cheer Chris Draper. Who retired from the Detroit Red Wings. Obviously, he famously was traded from the Winnipeg Jets to the Detroit Red Wings for Waller.
Yeah.
But he had a great career. Three cups, Richie? Three?
Yeah, three.
Three cups. Won a Selke. Played for the Canadian Olympic team.
98, 2002. Yep. Oh, three. No, four.
Yeah. Was he in the World Cup team also?
Yeah, World Cup, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, obviously he's part of that line with Maltby and McCarty.
Mm-hmm.
One of the classiest guys. He's going to stick around and work with Ken Holland and Mike Ilitch in some type of role. I don't think they've announced it yet. But love Chris Draper. Class act.
Good cheer.
Drew's got some nice enthusiasm over there.
He's hungry for the sandwich.
I'm going to cheer. I'm going to cheer Lou Lamoriello, GM of the Devils. We talked about it earlier, but, you know, they were sidled with that Ralston contract for a while, and congrats to them for getting rid of it.
Okay. Well, I tell you what.
Has Lou Lamoriello ever been cheered, Drew, on the show?
You probably cheered him.
I don't think I've ever cheered him.
But anytime we can praise somebody for taking advantage of the Islanders, it's well worth it. Richie?
I'm going to cheer Dry Island.
Dry Island? You've never been there? What would you know about it?
Like Mike Richards and Jeff Carter not being on Dry Island deserves... No, I just need to make fun of that. I don't really have a cheer, but I thought Dry Island hadn't yet been mentioned, so...
It's ridiculous. I mean, that locker room must have been the most dysfunctional locker room in the world. And you know that somebody on the team is leaking that stuff.
Well, that's what it was. People on the team, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean...
I actually do want to cheer. I actually wanted to cheer. For the most part, I feel like players are being a little bit more candid than they used to be. A little bit more honest and
with Twitter and everything.
Yeah, and I do enjoy that aspect of it. I feel like players are, so long as teams don't get in the way and they keep it clean, I think it's nice to hear from the players directly and... I like that portion. I read a good interview with Nicolas Gerdev today that David posted on LegalCurve.com, a link from a Philly blog on online, and he was honest, and you got a good idea. He said, you know, Peter Laviolette didn't like me, wanted me to fight. I like to hear that. That's good inside information.
There you go.
And tonight I'm going to go to Dry Island.
And tonight you're going to Dry Island. Good. That's a good idea as far as I'm concerned. And I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. We spoke about it very briefly earlier. I'm going to jeer all of those people who somehow link the Winnipeg Jets logo to some sort of pro-war concept of... It's just such utter nonsense.
War, what is it good for?
Absolutely nothing. But, it's such utter nonsense that it pains me. And I'm certainly I would be probably the most bleeding-heart liberal in the room here. And if I say that it's ridiculous, you can probably imagine how ridiculous it actually is.
Listen to the show next week, Drew. The sandwich. You're going to finally find out what the illegal curve... What's going to go in the illegal curve sandwich. It's going to be a good one next week. August 4th. Thursday. Don't miss it, Drew.
6 to 8.
He's doing your job.
6 to 8 next Thursday here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Before then, we'd like to thank today's guests, Bruce Dalbiggin of the Globe and Mail and Jeff Kerbison of the Winnipeg Free Press. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe and get the show sent to your iPod each and every week. You can always also check out the website, www.illegalcurve.com, updated multiple times per day, every day, with all of your Winnipeg Jets news and other news from around the NHL, as well as many original articles. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Michael Remus, for producer Tim, I am Drew Mindell, and until next Thursday night, we wish you a good night and good luck.
Been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk Thursday, August 4th, right after H&L. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.